Welcome to The Current, a podcast produced by We Stand for Energy. We Stand for Energy is a community that supports a reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy future for everyone, and is a project of EEI, Edison Electric Institute, the National Trade Association representing U.S. investor-owned electric companies. My name is Christine Telford, Managing Director of External Affairs at EEI, and I am your host. I'm excited to have two distinguished guests here with me today, and we're talking about the Inflation Reduction Act, otherwise known as the IRA. This piece of historic legislation recently passed by Congress has huge ramifications for the electric power industry and our workforce, so I'm excited to have our two guests join us. We have my colleague Eric Gray, Vice President of Government Relations for EEI, Edison Electric Institute. And we also have Austin Keyser, Assistant to the International President for Government Affairs for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, otherwise known as IBEW. Thank you, Eric and Austin, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us on, Christine.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Eric and Austin, this first question is for both of you. Austin, I think I'm going to start with you first. There has been a lot of discussion and messaging by both sides on the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act. Can you share with us what this bill does for the energy sector and labor?
Sure. So the legislation includes very strong labor protections and the over $300 billion in tax credits for clean energy infrastructure projects. The protections will guarantee these projects will create middle-class, family-sustaining career opportunities across America. It also makes historic investments in domestic energy production and manufacturing, creating opportunities for working people. These investments come at the right time in light of reduction in global oil production by Saudi Arabia and its OPEC allies and all sorts of other crazy things that are going on around the world. By investing in clean American-made energy, which is something we've long pushed for, new tax credits and programs created in the Inflation Reduction Act include incentives to existing newly created energy production tax credits, the PTCs. These credits are worth five times more as long as labor standards and apprenticeship requirements are met, ensuring that employers have a strong incentive to meet these standards that will support IBEW jobs. The Inflation Reduction Act also creates new tax credits. These new tax credits include battery storage investment credit, hydrogen production tax credit, nuclear production tax credit, carbon capture and sequestration, energy efficient commercial building tax credit, solar production tax credit, which will allow investor-owned utilities to avoid the tax normalization requirements associated with investor tax credits. Just a tremendous amount of opportunities for IBEW and its members.
That's awesome. Eric, I'm going to turn to you for your perspective.
Thanks, Christine. Austin did a great job rattling through a lot of the highlights of the bill. I think what he highlighted the most on the front end was when you look at this bill, which was approximately about $1 trillion worth of investments, that over $369 billion of it was very specific and steered towards clean energy and climate change programs. And then specifically of that, $270 billion of this was focused on a robust clean energy tax package, something that our industry from the beginning supported heavily, just because we viewed it as really an opportunity to further accelerate the clean energy transition that we were already moving forward with. I think what this bill ultimately does for our industry and for our labor partners too, who are going to be on this journey with us, is it just creates long-term certainty with the investments that we plan to make. These tax credits, they're all extended for long periods of time. In years past, we'd have these credits when it came to newer technologies that were only done 1-2 years. These are done for 10 years, 8 years with the new nuclear PTC. And when you look at what that does, really gives our member companies the certainty they need to make these long-term investments. And Austin did a great job of highlighting this as well, is it also included a lot of new credits for newer technologies like storage, like hydrogen, expansion of the CCS credit. A lot of these things go a long way, fuel the investments that our industry was already looking to make, but now it can do it in a way that ultimately is good for the reliability of the grid, but then also to, you know, making this affordable for our customers.
It sounds like there's a lot of good stuff in there, obviously, you know, to the benefit of labor, but also to the benefit of customers. Eric, you mentioned within the IRA, there's approximately $369 billion dedicated to energy security and climate change. Given that EEI member companies have been very aggressive in reducing carbon over the past 10 years, you talked about a lot of different provisions and tax credits. Of those within the IRA, do you see EEI member companies taking the most advantage of specific provisions, or what do you see there?
Yeah, great question. Honestly, in talking with a lot of the companies, it's really across the board, just because a lot of folks are already making huge investments in wind and solar, which, as Austin highlighted with the creation of the solar PTC, that really puts us on a level playing field with developers. So that investment we just foresee just really taking off within the industry. But then really looking towards, like I just talked about, with some of those newer technologies, there is a huge buzz. I mean, hydrogen, right? The potential value, not just for member companies and for its benefits to the grid, but then also potential affordability for customers. I think a lot of attention would be almost on all of these credits just combined. I think our member companies are really excited just for all of the credits.
Austin, now I'm going to turn to you. I don't think I'm misspeaking when I say labor was an integral part of the passage of the IRA. You know, labor partners, you all were big supporters of the legislation. We all know that previous climate legislation has not always been kind to organized labor or the building trades. What in the IRA attracted the labor community to be supportive?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start out with echoing what Eric said a minute ago. This is a 10-year investment, so we're not going to have all the fits and starts that we've had before. And you know, it's been very difficult. We need market predictability like anybody else in order to train a workforce. It takes 5 years to train a journey-level worker on the electrical fields. You know, as we kept tracking these extensions, I mean, there's these fits and starts. There's these new technologies that just really can't get off the ground because they're not really sure if they're other stable investments or not. Things like hydrogen, like Eric mentioned earlier, are big pieces of that. But, you know, really what attracted us to it, it was the opportunity to insert labor standards for the first time in these tax credits. We've fought for years, as you know, particularly in the wind and solar industries, to try to match the unit density that we have in other sources of power generation, like coal or natural gas or nuclear. And it's just been about impossible because of the way the taxes have been structured. So this is a huge opportunity for us to really lean in and say, look, we can get on board with a climate bill so long as it doesn't leave workers and communities behind, and that it also supports technologies and industries that are existing now that are clean energy. You know, nuclear, you know, we're looking at hydrogen, looking at carbon capture here. So we want to make sure that we both keep members that are employed. We look for new opportunities to develop renewables and other clean energy sources, but do it in a way that doesn't de-unionize one of the most unionized sectors of our entire economy with the highest paying wages and jobs, and support communities, a lot of rural communities all across this country that have just been decimated by premature plant closures. Also, you know, a lot of investment in manufacturing, and that not only gives us the opportunity to build, but in the IBEW, we also represent folks in advanced manufacture, particularly if they're in the electric supply chain. So for the utilities, for construction materials, things like that. So just a tremendous amount of opportunities here. We were able to lean in with strong support from the White House to just really, I think, knock it out of the park here and change face of the really non-union low path to low wage industries that were popping up in solar and wind with the independent power producers and others. So we're also really excited that it advantages, or at least brings up to parity, the utilities to own and make some of these investments themselves. And we have a very strong relationship, particularly the EEI companies, that allow us to do most of this work. It's an exciting time, and I think it's going to be a great 10 years based off of the provisions that we're able to secure in this bill.
Great. Thank you. Eric, the IRA provides for long-term extensions of various clean energy credits, as well as credits for new technologies such as storage, hydrogen, and CCS. Can you explain to our listeners why these clean energy tax credits are so important to the development and deployment of clean energy?
Yeah, thanks, Christine. You know, I think they're important in the sense of these credits almost create that foundational floor for the investment, especially in these newer and next generation technologies. In many of the cases, you know, when you look at like maybe like hydrogen or like storage, that these tax credits, especially with the long-term certainty in that long-term extension, can help fuel the investment and really take them off the ground from demonstration, development, deployment, like all through those kind of stages to bring them to a larger marketplace so that they could thrive. Because I think, you know, as an industry, when we look at How can we do things that reduce emissions? Very much regional. So I think what a lot of our companies want is every tool in the toolbox. And by having, again, a full suite, long-term extended tax credits, it really goes to helping with that issue. And I think what this also really does is, again, makes it affordable for our customers.
Great. And then Austin, I'm going to turn back to you because you touched on this a little bit earlier on kind of the importance that the legislation brings in terms of, you know, helping with areas of the economy that may be overlooked. But can we dig into kind of incentives to increasing energy manufacturing in the United States? As that was an important component of the bill, can you share with us the importance of American manufacturing to labor and any insight into how many jobs we're looking at generating in the U.S. under the IRA?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, just to, I guess to start this question off, I'll frame it a little bit. With the IBEW at one point had 400,000 members working in advanced manufacturing, again, mostly in the electric supply chain and advanced technologies. So it was a major part of the IBEW. And that was, you know, 30 years ago. Now we have less, we had about 400,000 members, we have less than 40,000 members, mostly because those jobs were moved overseas. And much like the closing of power plants and other things that we try to prevent in this bill, trying to re-domesticate manufacturing is just it's a top priority for the IBEW and a huge opportunity for not just the IBEW, but a lot of workers and a lot of communities across the country. And we've already seen just from the market signals, even though these tax credits aren't available yet, the market signals have already spurred just massive investments in domestic manufacturing for a lot of the things that we've been talking about already. It's a big, big deal, and just the IRA includes billions of dollars to expand wind and solar power production and bring electric vehicles closer to the financial reach of more Americans. It also includes a five-year, $60 billion production tax credit that would send payments directly to companies involved in domestic clean energy manufacturing. And about half the credits would flow to efforts to spur manufacturing of solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, and critical minerals, all these things that we've seen China just outpacing us, the rest of the world in general outpacing us in. So in the summary of the package, there's about $10 billion that would be dedicated to build clean technology manufacturing facilities, which again, huge opportunity for on the construction side, but also to go in and represent these workers after the fact and provide domestic energy security in the country. You know, production of hydrogen, you know, it's a great clean fuel. We consider that a manufacturing element here. Transportation sectors, big investments there. Then, of course, in power generation and the components needed there. It's a huge opportunity, but it's not the only thing that we've seen that this administration do. I mean, we've seen executive orders, the CHIPS Act, obviously the massive investment in manufacturing that's going to be critical here as we try to expand our footprint. And, you know, as we shift into new technologies, it's critical. CHIPS are very critical. And, you know, already, you know, we've had over $200 billion in announcements of just silicon investments. So big, big things for us. And, you know, I think it's going to change the economy. It's going to bring manufacturing back in a real way. And that's good for everybody.
That's great. And I'm glad you mentioned the CHIPS Act. I know that's not the focus of our conversation today, but that is another, you know, really important piece of legislation that obviously we were monitoring pretty closely. And I know Eric's team worked on. Eric, I'm going to turn it back to you. So included not only in the IRA, but also the bipartisan infrastructure law, there are various Buy America provisions and domestic content requirements. Where does EEI stand on these provisions? And do you believe there are any concerns over supply chain issues, which I think we know have been across industries have been an issue?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the Buy America provisions and domestic content, you know, I think as an industry, you know, and it highlights to what Austin was talking about on the last question of, you know, I think we're fully supportive of the efforts to onshore or bring manufacturing back to this country, not just to, you know, help solve the supply chain issue, but at the end of the day, you know, and I think a lot of our companies really do strive to buy America. They want to. They want to not only, you know, support the workforce, but support their local communities where a lot of these facilities hopefully will go. You know, I think when it comes to the support for both of those provisions as an industry, we're totally on board. As far as any concerns on supply chain, I think, you know, I don't think you can't read a news article right now without the discussion surrounding inflation or supply chain or food shortages, things like that. So there's definitely concerns. And that's when you all talked about the CHIPS bill. I think that's why Congress made the efforts there. They saw that, you know, we can't, from a long-term perspective, have this issue just keep cropping up. You know, the investments in things like the CHIPS bill, I think will go a long way to hopefully help us when it comes to supply chain issues that, you know, I think every industry is being impacted, including ours right now.
I think, you know, this is really the first time, if you step back and look at all these pieces of legislation and the executive orders that we passed, that we've really seen true industrial policy in the United States. These are massive investments that are going to change the face of the entire economy. And we've been, you know, it's been a losing proposition for a long time. You know, the word green, for instance, has just become synonymous with job loss and, you know, failing communities. And so that's a political fight that's been going on for a long time, because we've seen plants close, we've seen all these things happen. So the combination of these investments with labor standards and the protection of some current energy sources, you know, bringing in things like advanced nuclear power and hydrogen, coupled with, you know, massive investments in American manufacturing, I think make this much more palatable and something that the American public can see as an opportunity and not just a threat. That communities will be able to thrive instead of fail under these policies.
That's great. Yeah, I love those. Those are great points, Austin. And then next question, I'm going to turn to both of you. Austin, I think I'll start with you. The Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, otherwise, you know, we call it, affectionately call it the IIJA, passed at the end of 2021, and the IRA passed this year. Between these two, you know, there will be billions of dollars for much needed infrastructure improvements and development. What kind of benefits will we be seeing as EEI member companies and IBEW work together to take advantage of these federal funds?
So the IBEW is the largest energy union in the world. So we both see the opportunities and the threats associated with climate change. And there's an opportunity to fix it here. And I think the IIJA has been a, you know, is a big piece of the overall sort of portfolio of policies that have happened here. And it's a major piece, actually. And, you know, we support efforts to mitigate the impacts of climate change and responsibly reduce emissions domestically. The response to climate change is shown by the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. It can also be a significant opportunity for American workers and businesses to reinvigorate our domestic industries and invest in our communities. During the infrastructure bill, the IBEW lobbied for it in partnership with the EEI and a lot of other members to preserve key baseload energy sources, including natural gas, coal with carbon capture technology, and nuclear power. These baseload power solutions are important to maintain the security and reliability of our nation's electric grid. We know that. We've seen it winter after winter, a major storm event after major storm event. And because of our leadership's participation with the administration, many of IBEW's priorities are reflected in the Infrastructure Act. One of the primary goals of the Act is to modernize and increase resilience of our nation's power infrastructure. The bill invests a total of $73 billion in rebuilding the electric grid. Some of the objectives of the law to achieve this goal is modernizing our power grid by building and upgrading thousands of miles of resilient transmission lines to reduce outages and energy costs, increase energy efficiency and clean energy improvements in homes, schools, businesses, and communities, fund the development, demonstration, and deployment of low-carbon technologies. Right now, the Department of Energy is seeking public comments about how it should spend the $10.5 billion allocated through the bipartisan infrastructure bill to improve power grid resilience and reliability. Funding is focused primarily on transmission and distribution infrastructure, smart grid technologies, energy storage, and on-site backup power. These are things that we've been fighting for and we know that we need as a part of our smart grid, both us and EEI, for a lot of years. The IBEW also lobbied on provisions that were included in the Inflation Reduction Act. Some of these provisions included the prevailing wage and apprenticeship utilization bonus that was included. We talked about that earlier, the nuclear production tax credit that we've already talked about. We think that'll keep 15,000 IBEW members on the job. That's a huge, huge priority for us. And the solar production tax credit, with the help of our partners and investor-owned utilities, especially if they'll build some of this on their own, will create thousands and thousands of IBEW jobs across the country and be directly employed by the utilities, which is what we prefer, honestly. And the $700 million for high-assay, lowly enriched uranium, the HALEU to be made available for advanced nuclear reactors is critical and positioning the United States to not only able to supply our own domestic nuclear fuels, but to export across the world and keep other countries who we may not want being the leaders in the nuclear fuel production to take the helm and play major roles in the world economy. You know, there are just tons and tons of things in here. Transmission alone is a $2 billion transmission facility financing office, which was newly created. We'll make loans available. That's never been done before. That's going to just spur a ton of investment through public-private partnerships and through just private partnerships with these investments through these loans. So, and a secondary market created by the EV tax credit is something that we were very focused on. You know, a lot of folks can't afford to go out and buy brand new EVs. And if we want to see some market penetration here, we need to move to a secondary market incentivized to the purchase of used cars. So that's making it more affordable for the middle class and working families. I think that'll help get this industry off the ground. So those are just some of the things, but all great, great big investments that are going to kind of reshape what we're looking at here in the economy.
Can I just say ditto again to whatever Austin just said? Because like he just rattled through it all, like essentially my talking points. This is just once again showing the great partnership we have with our labor partners. As Austin said, you know, we worked a lot very closely together on both of these bills. But maybe some things to add, Christine, if you just don't mind me jumping in, is, you know, I think when we started our advocacy efforts surrounding the bipartisan infrastructure law, and something that really came to fruition, and I think at the end of the day, really in a good way, got across the finish line, was almost when it came to us was me too. What was, you know, we're infrastructure too. And I feel the infrastructure bills of the past kind of touched on our issues a little bit more. But when you look at this bill, you know, and, you know, what was done in the bipartisan infrastructure law, you know, it, for our industry, there was over $111 billion in both direct and indirect funding that is spread across 86 programs, which touches in this industry, will really ultimately benefit our customers and be able to, as our companies make these investments, that's what these tax credits do, is they not just support that investment, but then lead to savings and affordability for our customers. So that's kind of the big public benefits that we see in it.
I love it. That all sounds good. And Austin kind of had me at, you know, securing 15,000 jobs, I think was the number. So all of these sound like great things. I'm going to close that with one last question for both of you. I'll start with Austin again. So we've talked about, you know, this level of funding, this unprecedented level of funding is going to generate new technologies, a new workforce, new direction in energy delivery and resiliency. So Austin, tell me, what are we going to see over the next 5 years in the energy delivery, kind of transportation manufacturing space? And specifically for you, what does the new worker look like to fill these jobs at companies, EEI member companies within the physical workforce?
Yeah, that's a big question on its own. Now, I will say that 15,000 jobs comment a minute ago, that was just in the nuclear industry. That was just preserving the jobs in the nuclear industry through the one provision in the bill. So we're looking at hundreds of thousands of new jobs. So the opportunity, because I've just had to stagger it, just in the three major bills that passed in the last 12 months, you know, we are looking at just huge amounts of opportunity to bring new workers into the industry. And it comes, the bills come with diversity and inclusion requirements, which we supported. We're leaders in the industry, and especially in the electrical construction side. And a partnership with the EEI companies on how we attract more minority and female youth into their companies. So we strive to welcome diversity at all levels of our membership. And to that end, in 2015, President Stephenson initiated IBW Strong. It's designed to enhance diversity by expanding outreach to bring people from traditionally unrepresented and marginalized communities into the IBW, making these new opportunities a reality for all workers. In the U.S. alone, you know, because we represent the Canada also, we have nearly 300 construction training centers. And the IBW has, since 2015, increased the percentage of new apprentices coming into our program who identify as minority or as female. New apprentice rates for women and people of color have increased to 35%. A huge improvement since 2015. And between 2015 and 19, there was a 75% increase in men who identify as minority enrolled in apprenticeship programs and IBW apprenticeship programs. And as a result, in 2020, one in four active male apprentices identify as minority. And new females entering apprenticeship has increased by 90% since 2015. So those are some pretty big numbers. And these types of investments, and again, that market predictability that Eric talked about early on, it gives us the ability to train even more apprentices. And as we're putting them on union jobs, we can diversify that workforce faster than anybody else. Diversity and inclusion are institutional priorities for IBW, and they always have been. We've focused, really doubled down on it under President Stephenson's leadership. And our members, we agree, should reflect the community that we work and live in.
I think that's really exciting. Eric, just to close it out, I'm going to turn to you just from an industry perspective. What do you see over the next 5 years?
No, I think, you know, Our industry has gone through a massive transformation over the last several years through a huge clean energy transformation. When you actually look at it, you know, our industry is our leaders when it comes to clean energy. You know, carbon emissions from the power sector were at 36% below 2005 levels at the end of 2021. These emission levels are as low as they were in 1984, while electricity use is up 72% since then. So I think as all of a sudden you're now injecting a huge amount of new funding opportunities through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and Clean Energy Technology, and then layering on top of that $270 billion worth of tax credits that will further accelerate the investments into this clean energy transition.
Great. All exciting things, all good things coming out of the IRA. Thank you both again for being on. Austin, thank you especially, and thank you to the IBEW for being such a strong partner with EEI and our member companies. We always love having you guys on the podcast. Eric, thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you all next time. We hope that you found this to be an informative 15 minutes, and we look forward to bringing you additional expert insights on energy policy. To learn more about EEI and the electric power industry, visit www.eei.org. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast by searching for The Current and We Stand for Energy.